people to him, despite her young age, 10. She's very intelligent and has a good understanding of Holden. Instead of calling her, Holden goes to the hotel club called the Lavender Room. It's a dive. He dislikes the band and the place is nearly empty. The waiter won't let him order alcohol. He notices some women at a nearby table and one of them catches his eye. They are tourists from Seattle, Washington. He begins talking with them and asks them to dance. He dances with the blonde one who initially attracted him. She's a good dancer, but a poor conversationalist, obsessed with movie stars and things Holden despises. She dislikes it when he uses strong language. He tries to compliment her and kiss her forehead, but she gets angry at him. After dancing, they sit down and Holden finds them all stupid. He can't have a real conversation and gets sore at them when they ask his age. Then they get up and leave, and Holden pays their bill, a little miffed that they didn't even offer to pay for the drinks they had before he arrived. Holden leaves as the Lavender Room is closing, still sore that he couldn't get any alcohol. Chapter 11. In the hotel lobby, Holden spends most of this chapter remembering his friend Jane Gallagher, who he still can't get off his mind. They never got too physical, but he still felt very close to her. He recalls how they met. Her dog used to crap on Holden's lawn, and this irritated his mother. When Holden saw Jane near the pool, he struck up a conversation with her, and they became friends. They played golf and checkers together. One day, while playing checkers, Jane's stepfather, who both she and Holden disliked, asked Jane where his cigarettes were. She wouldn't answer him, and then she wouldn't speak to Holden, and a tear fell from her eye. Holden began to kiss her all over her face. He asked her if the guy had ever tried to touch Jane sexually, and she said no, and Holden never did find out what exactly was the matter. Holden thinks about all this in the lobby and about Stradlater trying to get with her. Still anxious and uneasy, Holden takes a cab to Ernie's, a nightclub in Greenwich Village that Holden used to go to with his brother D.B. Ernie is a great piano player, although conceited. Chapter 12. In the taxi ride to Ernie's, Holden again asks the driver about the ducks in the lagoon in Central Park. Do you happen to know where they go in the wintertime by any chance? This driver also thinks that Holden is nutty for even asking, and it seems to really rile him. They discuss where the fish go also, since they obviously can't leave. They come to the conclusion that the fish live in the frozen ice, absorbing nutrition through it. This is definitely not true. In reality, only the upper layer of water turns to ice. The lower layers remain as water, and the fish live in it. Holden gets to Ernie's, and the place is packed with college students, and Holden can't stand how everyone is treating Ernie like his playing is holy. Holden says the only reason he's there is so he won't have to be alone. He is annoyed by the people he sees and hears. Then a girl named Lillian Simmons recognizes him. She used to date DB, Holden's brother. She's with a Navy guy who Holden thinks is uptight. She invites Holden to join them, and he says he was just leaving. He didn't want to leave, but he must if he's to avoid joining them. He and the Navy guy say it was nice to meet each other, but it's obvious neither means it. Holden is clearly being a phony, what he hates most in others. But he justifies it. If you want to stay alive, you have to say that stuff, though. Chapter 13. Rather than taking another taxi and a driver he dislikes, Holden walks the 41 blocks back to his hotel. His hands are cold, and he wishes he'd been able to find his gloves when he was packing. He thinks someone stole them, but even if he knew who'd done it, he probably wouldn't have had the nerve to confront the guy. He says that he's a bit of a coward when it comes to fistfights. He especially can't stand to see somebody get punched in the face. He feels lousy and wants to stop and have another drink, but instead he just gives a guy who comes out of a bar directions. He gets back to the hotel and takes the elevator up to his room. The guy operating the elevator is named Maurice, and he asks Holden if he wants a prostitute. Maurice says it's $5 for a short time and $15 to have the girl till noon. Holden unthinkingly says he'll just take a throw, that is, a short time. Maurice says he'll send a girl to his room. While Holden waits for her, he gets spruced up. Even if she is just a prostitute, he wants to look okay. He admits to us at this time that he's still a virgin, although he says there have been many times when he could have lost his virginity. When the girl arrives, Holden thinks she's kind of young and loses his nerve. Her name is Sunny. She takes off her dress, and that makes him more uncomfortable. He wants to just talk to her, and she gets rude. She wants to know why Holden sent for her if he didn't want sex. He tells her a lie about a recent operation. Sunny says he'll still have to pay, and that it's $10. Holden says the price agreed upon was $5, not $10, and refuses to give her more than $5. She leaves, and Holden finds the whole experience stressful. Chapter 14. Holden sits and smokes for a good while after Sunny is gone. He imagines talking to his dead brother, Allie, something he does when he's depressed. He finally gets in bed and thinks about praying, but he's an atheist, and it won't mean anything to him. He explains how he likes Jesus, but not other people in the Bible, like the disciples. Then there's a knock at the door, and he has a bad feeling he knows who it is. He opens it, and Maurice and Sonny are there. They come into his room and say he owes them $5 more. He tells them they're crooks, and Maurice said it would only be $5. It looks like Maurice might rough Holden up to get the money, but then Sonny finds Holden's wallet and just takes it. They're about to leave when Holden calls Maurice a dirty moron and tells him he'll be begging in the street in a few years. Maurice hits Holden in the stomach, and they leave. Holden staggers to the bathroom, pretending he's been shot in the gut. He then has a fantasy about shooting Maurice with a gun, and then having Jane Gallagher come over to bandage Holden up. Realizing the ludicrous nature of his fantasy, he says, "The goddamn movies, they can ruin you. I'm not kidding." He takes a bath and goes back to bed, saying that he'd commit suicide if he only thought they would cover him up after he landed on the pavement. He wouldn't want people to be staring at him as a bloody mess. Chapter 15. Holden wakes up around 10 that Saturday morning. He's hungry, but doesn't want to order room service because they might send up Maurice. He calls Sally Hayes and makes a date with her to see a matinee show. He decides to check out of the hotel. He takes his suitcase to Grand Central Station and puts it in a storage locker. Then he goes to a diner and eats a big breakfast. He thinks about cheap luggage and how it can make him hate a person. While eating, he talks with some nuns who he likes. He discusses English literature with one of them, explaining why he didn't like some parts of Romeo and Juliet. Even though he is low on money, he makes a $10 donation to the nuns. He also tries to pay their bill, but they refuse. He is very glad they don't ask him if he is Catholic. He's known people who do that, and he really hates it. Then he accidentally blows smoke in their faces, and he feels guilty about it and apologizes profusely. He wishes he had given them more money and thinks, "Goddamn money. It always ends up making you blue as hell." Chapter 16. After breakfast, Holden walks toward Broadway. He considers how none of the women he knows would ever do something like collect money in an old straw basket. He's also saddened that those nuns will never have a fancy lunch in a nice restaurant. As he walks, he hears a kid singing "Come and Throw the Rye," the Robert Burns poem, but Holden misremembers and thinks the line is, "If a body catch a body coming through the rye," replacing meat with catch. Holden sees a lot of people waiting in line for movies, and he's sickened by it. He goes to a record store to buy a copy of Little Shirley Beans, a record he heard at Pensy. He's getting it for his sister Phoebe. Bored, he almost calls Jane Gallagher again. Instead, he gets tickets to a Broadway show. He hates movies and actors in general, but thinks live shows are better than movies. He gets tickets to a show called I Know My Love that features a famous husband-wife acting team known as the Lunts. Eager to get off Broadway, he takes a cab to Central Park and hopes he'll see Phoebe. She's not there, but he talks with a little girl who knows her and suggests that Holden check the museum. He points out that it's Sunday, so that can't be the case. Holden helps the girl tighten her skate, and then walks to the museum anyway. He reminisces about his own trips to the museum in elementary school, and how it was always different. Even though the museum stayed the same, he changed. When he gets to the museum, he changes his mind about entering. He gets another taxi and goes to the Biltmore Hotel, where he agreed to meet Sally Hayes for their date. Chapter 17. Holden waits for Sally Hayes in the lobby of the Biltmore and watches girls. He ruminates on how the girls look, he's clearly horny, and how some people are incredibly boring. Sally arrives. She's delighted he got tickets to the lunch show. Holden has sarcastic and resentful thoughts about her conversation the entire way, and when they watch the show, it's even worse. At the intermission, Sally recognizes a boy she knows and they talk. Their whole conversation nauseates Holden, and his initial affection for Sally begins to sour. I sort of hated old Sally by the time we got in the cab. She suggests they go ice skating at Radio City. He is hesitant, and knows she just wants to show off how cute her butt is in the dress they rent her, but Holden agrees. They skate poorly, and Holden is self-conscious from the onlookers. They eventually sit for a drink, and Holden unleashes on Sally his whole dissatisfaction with school and life in general. He criticizes New York and the way everyone lives. He suggests that he and Sally go away and live in the woods somewhere. He says he felt like he could actually do it at the time. Sally presents objections and gets on Holden's nerves. His emotions quickly swing, as they've done before, and he suddenly can't stand Sally. He says, "You give me a royal pain in the ass if you want to know the truth," and this really turns her against him. They leave, separately, and he can't understand why he said all he did. He meant how he felt about her at the time, but now he thinks it's crazy. This is the madman stuff that he referred to at the beginning of the book, his attempt to break out of the life he's known and into something more authentic. We're beginning to see he has the desire, but not the knowledge and capabilities to do so at this point in his life. Perhaps if he was a few years older or lived in a different decade or century, he might attempt a lifestyle similar to Jack Kerouac in On the Road or Henry David Thoreau in Walden. But in late 1940s New York, as a 16-year-old boy, he feels trapped. Chapter 18. As Holden leaves the skating rink, he considers calling Jane Gallagher. He called her earlier, but her mother answered, so he quickly hung up. He has been longing to see her throughout the book, but he never will. She is part of his elusive longing for something authentic, always out of his grasp. He does call her now, but no one answers. Holden wonders who else he might call. He phones Carl Luce, a boy he knew at another school, and they agree to meet that night for a drink. In the meantime, Holden goes to the movies at Radio City. He complains about the Christmas show, and then he complains about the sappy movie. Complaining about things well within his control is a common pattern for Holden. The movie makes Holden think about war and how his brother D.B. was in World War II. Holden thinks he would be crazy if he had to be in the army, and he can't understand why D.B. recommended Ernest Hemingway's novel A Farewell to Arms. He ends the chapter this way. "If there's ever another war, I'm going to sit right the hell on top of it. I'll volunteer for it, I swear to God I will." Chapter 19. Holden begins this chapter talking about the Wicker Bar, how it's a place full of phonies and how he hates it. He's waiting for Luce there, and it's pretty crowded. Holden thinks he sees Flitz in the crowd, slang for gay men. He transitions into a description of Luce, who was Holden's student advisor at Wooten, one of his previous schools. He has a sort of admiration for Luce's maturity, sexual experience, and intellectual capabilities, but Holden is also capable of seeing Luce as an uptight snob. Luce arrives and starts drinking. Holden quizzes him about his sex life and learns he is seeing a Chinese woman in her 30s. Luce is irritated by Holden's immature questions. Holden says he'll stop, but continues with them anyway. He's probably a little drunk at this point. Luce says that Holden needs psychoanalysis. This was very popular in the 40s and 50s. Luce's father is an analyst. Holden wants Luce to stay longer and admits he's lonely, but Luce says he must leave. Chapter 20. Holden remains at the Wicker Bar quite a while longer, drinking and waiting for the familiar performers to show up. He gets very drunk and considers calling Jane Gallagher again, but instead calls Sally Hayes and tells her he'll come over to trim the tree on Christmas Eve. She immediately knows he's drunk and soon hangs up on him. He goes to the restroom and sits on the radiator, complimenting the piano player when he comes in. The man can also see Holden is drunk and encourages him to go home. Holden eventually leaves and walks to the park. He is cold, but he wants to see if ducks are in the pond. On his way, he drops and breaks the record he got for his sister Phoebe. He puts the pieces in his coat pocket. Further evidence that he's extremely drunk comes when he can't even find the pond he's looking for. He sits on a bench, and the cold weather makes him imagine how he'll get pneumonia and die. Alcohol seems to trigger Holden's imagination, and he envisions his relatives all coming from far away for his funeral, as they did when Allie died. He doesn't like the idea of being buried in a cemetery. As he sits there counting his money, he realizes he only has $4.30 left. He takes 4 quarters and a nickel and skims them across the ice. This is an example of Salinger torturing his character, making him do something he'll regret later. Holden feels bad when he thinks of Phoebe learning that he's died of pneumonia, so he decides to go home and sneak in to see her. He walks home and is no longer tired or drunk, just cold. Chapter 21. When Holden gets to the building where his family lives, he's pleased to discover there's a new elevator boy who won't recognize Holden and tell the family he was there. Holden wants to sneak in to see his sister and then sneak out. He lies to the elevator boy about visiting his neighbors, then quietly enters his own family's apartment. It's quiet and dark, and he's worried most about his mother hearing him. She has very sensitive hearing. There's a great deal of hyperbolic language in this section. Holden loves to speak in a very exaggerated manner. He makes his way slowly to his sister's room, but remembers that she always sleeps in DB's room when he's away in Hollywood. So Holden goes to DB's room. He doesn't wake Phoebe right away. He admires the fine clothes his mother has bought her, and looks through her notebook at the cute notes she has made. When he wakes her, Phoebe is delighted to see him. She talks about the play she is in. Holden discovers their parents are at a party in Connecticut and won't be home till late. They talk about a boy who seems to have a crush on Phoebe, about the record Holden broke, about DB writing a movie about Annapolis, and other things. Phoebe is suspicious that Holden is home early and correctly deduces that he was kicked out of Pensy. Phoebe says, "Daddy's going to kill you," and buries her head in a pillow in sadness. Holden leaves her for a second to get some cigarettes from a box on the living room table. Chapter 22. Holden continues talking with Phoebe, who is still concerned about her father's anger with Holden. He tells her not to worry. The worst that'll happen is Holden will be sent to military school. But he says that won't happen because he'll go away to a ranch in Colorado he says he knows about. It's ironic that Phoebe seems to be more organized and coherent about the future than Holden. He tries to explain why he couldn't stand Pensy, and she says, "You don't like anything that's happening." He says this isn't true, and she tells him to name one thing he likes. He tries to concentrate, and instead thinks of a boy named James Castle at a school he went to. The boy was bullied by other kids until he jumped out a window and killed himself. Holden remembers that the boy had asked to borrow his turtleneck sweater. When Phoebe prompts him again to name something he likes, he says he likes Allie. He says he likes talking with his sister as they're doing right now. She isn't satisfied with either answer and asks Holden to think of something he wants to be in the future. He refers to the Robert Burns poem that he heard the boy singing earlier and says that he'd like to be a catcher in the rye. He misremembers the lyrics and imagines an adult standing at the edge of a cliff as children play in the rye. He would stand at the edge to make sure the children don't fall off the cliff. Holden then goes to make a phone call in the living room and tells Phoebe not to fall asleep. He will call a former teacher of his, Mr. Antolini. Chapter 23. Mr. Antolini takes Holden's call and tells him he can come over, even though it's very late. Holden tells us that Antolini is a young man. When James Castle killed himself, Antolini covered the boy with his coat and carried him to the infirmary. After the call, Holden dances with Phoebe and talks some more until they hear a sound. It's their parents, just returned from the party. Holden puts out his cigarette and hides in the closet. Their mother comes in to say goodnight to Phoebe and smells the smoke. A quick liar like Holden, she tells her mom she tried a cigarette. Her mother doesn't approve. She leaves, and Holden comes out. Phoebe wants him to stay there, but he says he'll go to Aunt Eleni's. He just needs a little money, which Phoebe gladly lends him. He gives her the red hunting that he's worn throughout the novel. She wears it to bed. Holden leaves the house without really caring if he is caught. Foreshadowing the events at Aunt Eleni's, he says, "I almost wished they did, in a way." Chapter 24. Holden tells us more about Mr. and Mrs. Aunt Eleni. She is quite a bit older than her husband. Mr. Aunt Eleni is also acquainted with Holden's family. He has read his brother D.B.'s stories, and he had lunch with Holden's father. He asks Holden about why he left Pensy, and the boy criticizes a class on oral expression that he failed. He liked it when people make digressions in their speech, but there was a very oppressive, judgmental tone to the class that didn't allow that. This relates to the larger issue of Holden's own resistance and dislike of the society as a whole. Mr. Aunt Eleni tries to convince Holden that sometimes there are benefits to sticking to one course, in speech or in life. Mr. Aunt Eleni has been drinking. Holden just wants to sleep, and is a little peeved that this lecture can't wait till morning. Mr. Aunt Eleni tells Holden he is heading for a special kind of fall, a horrible kind. The man isn't permitted to feel or hear himself hit bottom. He just keeps falling and falling. Typically, this depresses Holden more. Mr. Aunt Eleni also writes a quote down from the psychoanalyst Wilhelm Steckel. "The mark of the immature man is that he wants to die nobly for a cause, while the mark of the mature man is that he wants to live humbly for one." He wants Holden to apply himself towards some direction in his life, and he stresses the urgency of it. Holden tries to stifle a yawn, but eventually it comes out. Mr. Aunt Eleni decides to let him go to sleep on the couch. Holden sleeps a little, then wakes up and discovers Mr. Aunt Eleni petting or patting his head. Holden freaks out and can't understand what's going on, and decides Aunt Eleni is some kind of pervert. Aunt Eleni tells him to keep his voice down. Holden says that he just remembered his bag at the station locker, and that he has to leave. Aunt Eleni wants him to wait till morning, but Holden says there is money in the bag, he can't leave there. This is, of course, just an excuse to get out of there right away. Even though he is tired, he is more uncomfortable around Mr. Aunt Eleni. Aunt Eleni asks him to come back afterward, and Holden says he will, but it's clear to us he won't. There is an awkward moment in the hall as Holden waits for the elevator, and Aunt Eleni just watches him and tells him he is a very, very strange boy. Chapter 25. Holden gets out on the streets of New York in the early hours of the morning. He's tired, but doesn't want to spend any more of Phoebe's money to stay in a hotel, so he sleeps on a bench in Grand Central Station. He doesn't sleep well. He's worried that maybe Mr. Aunt Eleni wasn't trying to make a sexual pass at him after all. He just isn't sure, and he likes Mr. Aunt Eleni for many reasons. He reads a magazine he finds, and it worries him that he has cancer. He walks over to the east side to find a cheap diner and gets breakfast. He orders donuts, but finds he can't eat them when they arrive, so he sends them back. He's very depressed. Walking around, he sees a lot of Christmas activities on the streets. He recalls a time when he was crossing the streets and worried that he wouldn't make it to the other side, that he'd just disappear, and he had prayed to his dead brother Allie to let him get across. Holden lives largely in his imagination in this chapter, and he envisions himself hitchhiking west and getting a job at a gas station. He would pretend to be a deaf mute so he wouldn't have to talk to anyone, and eventually he'd build a cabin in the woods and marry a deaf mute wife. He really thinks he's going to do it. He just wants to see Phoebe before he leaves and give her back her money. He goes to her school that morning and writes a note asking her to meet him at the art museum at 12:15 p.m. While he's at the school, he sees the phrase, "Fuck you," written on the wall. It really upsets him that kids have to see that. He rubs it off, but later he sees another one, and he's unable to rub that off. From the school, Holden goes to the museum. He has about half an hour to spare, so he waits inside. A pair of boys ask him where the mummies are, and Holden helps them find them. When he's alone, He sees another "fuck you" written on the wall and says, "You can't ever find a place that's nice and peaceful, because there isn't any. You may think there is, but once you get there, when you're not looking, somebody will sneak up and write 'fuck you' right under your nose." He's feeling horrible and goes to the bathroom. As he exits the restroom, he passes out, but seems to feel better after that. He waits for Phoebe some more and worries she won't show and that he'll never see any of his relatives again. He has plans for Phoebe and DB to come visit his cabin in the woods. Phoebe does finally show up, however. She has a suitcase with her and says she wants to go with Holden. He tells her no and to shut up. This really gets her mad. To appease her, Holden says he won't leave after all, and that he'll go with Phoebe for a walk to the zoo. She's still angry, but goes along with him. They go to the carousel in the park after that. Phoebe rides it at Holden's urging, and enjoys herself, forgiving Holden in the process. He assures her again that he won't leave to go west. It starts to rain, but Holden doesn't care because he's happy to see Phoebe riding the carousel and enjoying herself. He concludes the book's action by saying, "It was just that she looked so damn nice. The way she kept going around and around, in her blue coat and all. God, I wish you could have been there." Chapter 26. The last chapter is more of an epilogue than anything else. Holden says he doesn't feel like talking about the school he's going to in the fall. He's relating all this from California still, and his brother DB has visited him, and Holden told him all about the story of those few days. A psychoanalyst asks Holden if he'll apply himself when he returns to school, and Holden is annoyed by the question. He can't say until he actually gets there. He regrets telling so many people about how he spent those few days. It has made him think about the people more and miss them. Even people like Stradlater and Maurice. He concludes, "It's funny. Don't ever tell anybody anything. If you do, you start missing everybody." Critical questions and essay topics. Here are some critical questions and essay topics about the book. These questions may be answered in a variety of ways based on your reading of the text. I have provided suggestions in the answers below, but I encourage you to consider alternative answers as you explore these topics. 1. Why has The Catcher in the Rye appealed to so many people? More than the plot, the attitude and tone of the book have made it appealing to many young people. Holden Caulfield represents an honesty and disillusionment that has not been so explicitly stated before this time, and readers found it unique. 2. Why does Holden go to so many places that he seems to hate? We witness Holden go to many places, the movies, bars, clubs, that he complains heavily about. Part of this stems from his attitude. He would complain about any place or anything. He continues to go to these places because he feels trapped in his world and sees no other option available to him. 3. Why is Holden so concerned about what happened between Stradlater and Jane Gallagher? This relates to how Holden views Jane and Stradlater. He views Jane as pure and good, and Stradlater as malicious and selfish. The idea of them meeting together is hard for him to deal with. He cares for Jane in a sentimental way, largely the product of his imagination, and he wants to keep her safe. 4. When Phoebe asks Holden to name something he likes, why does he think of James Castle? James Castle, the boy who threw himself out a window to escape bullying, represents an innocence that Holden admires in people. He sees it in children and others like James. Holden relates to the feeling of being victimized by a cruel world. 5. Why does Holden want to be a catcher in the rye? The idea of being a nurturing caretaker, of protecting children from the danger of the world, is something that strikes a chord with Holden. But the job or role of catcher in the rye is something he perceives as unavailable to him, putting it alongside his other fantasies. 6. How does Holden view children in the novel? Holden sees an innocence and gentleness in children that he can't find in the adult world. As such, he feels protective and compassionate toward children. 7. Compare and contrast Mr. Spencer and Mr. Antolini. Holden cannot connect to Mr. Spencer when he goes to meet him. He feels the old man is talking to him rather than with him. Mr. Antolini, on the other hand, is someone Holden can relate to, but because of the strange action, petting or patting Holden's head, when he awakes, Holden feels betrayed by Mr. Antolini. 8. How are Holden's parents depicted in the story? Holden never directly interacts with his parents in the novel. Based on his mother's conversation with Phoebe and other hints, they seem like caring people. They are probably nicer than Holden likes to imagine. They put up with his many failures at school and have sent him to a rest home out west, rather than immediately sending him to military school, for instance. They seem to have sympathy for Holden and are trying to understand the psychological issues going on within him. 9. What is Holden trying to accomplish over the course of his few days in the city? Or is he simply killing time until he goes home? Underneath his seemingly random actions, Holden is trying to make a genuine connection with people. He doesn't seem ready to admit this to himself, and he settles for many inferior alternatives along the way. 10. How does Holden reconcile his hatred of phonies with his own lies? Holden puts on many masks throughout the book, usually trying to appear older and more mature than he is. Because he knows he is being phony when he does this, he carries an underlying self-loathing and low self-esteem. 11. Is Holden changed by the events of the novel in a significant way? This is a difficult question to answer. Yes, he does abandon his plan to go west, accede to his sister's wishes, and reach some kind of resolution with his parents. However, it's hard to say if he's genuinely changed. He is still very bitter and largely uncaring about his future. All we see at the book's conclusion is that he'll sustain himself a little longer. That might lead to a change, but it's too soon to say now. Conclusion. The Catcher in the Rye is a modern classic, as popular today as when it was first released. It unsettles us and asks difficult questions about how we live. I hope this guide has helped you navigate this book and deepened your understanding of all that occurs in its pages. This has been Catcher in the Rye, a reader's guide to the J.D. Salinger novel. Written by Robert Crayola, narrated by Sean Lenhart. Copyright 2014 by Robert Crayola. Production copyright 2014. By Robert Crayola.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.